Tom Woods Show, episode 1683.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Folks, by now you've probably noticed that news about the virus is almost always fact-free hysteria these days. So you need my brand new free ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About the Lockdown. Go pick it up at wrongaboutlockdown.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. We've been hearing a lot lately about the need for a second wave of lockdowns because we've had rises in cases in a number of places, and this just goes to show how stupid and backward these rubes are, and we need to take their freedoms away again and all that. So I want to go through exactly what's going on. Now, I have a quick thing I want to first say about South Carolina, and then I want to spend some time in particular on Texas and then maybe a couple of other places, because it will really take your breath away to see how they've contrived a crisis out of what's happening. But the first thing I want to share is something that somebody in my elite group shared having to do with hospitalizations in South Carolina. So she says, "This morning I heard on the radio that 71% of South Carolina hospital beds are being used." And of course, this was meant to be something that was supposed to panic us. So she goes on to say, "So I looked it up. What percentage of hospital beds is normally used at this time of year in South Carolina? That would be somewhere between 69% and 70%. Well, when you provide that kind of context, it no longer seems like such a big problem. Now I want to share, before going on to some additional analysis, I want to actually read to you a letter that was written by a senior executive at a Texas ER chain that sees thousands of patients a month. And this letter was sent to Alex Berenson, the former New York Times reporter, who has been the best source on the virus. And Alex shared this on his Twitter feed, and the person actually shared his own name. He actually went on the record, which is risky in this day and age when you're only allowed to have one opinion on everything. His name is J.B., I guess it's Nieman, N-E-I-M-A-N. Let me read to you the relevant portions of this letter. "I'm the managing partner and general counsel of a Texas-based company that owns and operates 13 freestanding emergency clinics in the state of Texas. I follow your reporting and wanted to share with you some information on Texas. I want people to hear this story as opposed to the mainstream reporting. In June, we tested over 2,231 patients, data through last Thursday. Positive rate is now close to 20%, was 4 to 6% positive in May. Vast majority of the cases are mild to very mild symptoms. Average age of the people getting tested is mid-30s. Very different patient in terms of age than we've seen before June. Most of these patients would not have met the strict criteria that we previously had, and all health facilities had, for COVID testing. Now with more testing kits, we're able to test a broader group of patients. Clinically, we've had very few hospital transfers because of COVID. Vast majority of the patients are better within 2 to 3 days of the visit, and most would be described as having a cold, a mild one at that, or the symptoms related to allergies. We've often provided a steroid shot and some antibiotics. By the time we have follow-up calls, most of the patients are no longer experiencing any symptoms. They often say the shot really made a difference. In terms of what is driving them to the ER, roughly half have been told by their employers to get a test. They have a sneeze or a cough, and their employer tells them to go home and get tested. The other half just want to know. They have mild symptoms, and some don't have any symptoms, but game the system and check a box that they have a symptom so they can get a test. They cannot get a test unless they present with symptoms. If they have no symptoms, we send them away, which does happen. The average length of stay of COVID patients is 3 to 5 days, much lower than the patients being seen in April and early May. Their symptoms are also milder. Most of these patients are not ending up in the ICU. The hospital ICUs are filled with really sick people with non-COVID issues. They didn't come in earlier because they were scared, and now they are super sick. From multiple sources at different hospitals, they have plenty of capacity and no shortage of acute care beds. No real data on breakdown of patients who have COVID but are not in the hospital because of COVID. Recognition that because all patients are tested for COVID, you have some percentage of patients listed as COVID patients who are non-COVID symptomatic, and that the hospitalization rate is somewhat driven by hospitals taking in their normal patients with other medical issues. Finally, I heard several stories of how discharge planners are being pressured to put COVID as primary diagnosis, as that pays significantly better. Hospitals want to avoid the discussion, but if they don't, they risk another shutdown. This may be an explanation for why there is a gap in hospital executives saying they have plenty of capacity and the increasing number of COVID hospitalizations. You open up your hospitals for normal medical care and you test every one of those patients. The result is higher percentage of patients who have COVID. Now those patients are listed as COVID patients. Something else to pass on. Since COVID hit, our ER volume decreased 50% in the month of April, year over year. However, our percentage of level 5 ER claims, highest level and very high acuity patients, doubled. The patients that did come in often waited much longer than they should have and normally would have. People were just so scared. Overall, based upon what we are seeing at our facilities, the above information is really more of a positive story. You have more people who are testing positive with minimal symptoms. This means that the fatality rate is less than commonly reported. Let's get to some more data on New York. And here I have the assistance of David Stockman, because I actually am a member subscriber to David Stockman's Contra Corner, which I've advertised to you before. And some people have said, oh, but I have to pay to read him. Some people are worth paying to read. Okay, you can read my email newsletter for nothing. Okay, go over to wrongaboutlockdown.com and you get my daily newsletter, which is not just about the lockdowns, but from time to time it is. Anyway, what Stockman is saying here is that the numbers in Texas, Florida, and Arizona just do not justify the panic at all. And he says, first of all, let's remember that even in the worst parts of New York City, there was never a random sample Grim Reaper marauding through the general population. The overwhelming source of the cases and deaths that came from New York City had to do with the mismanagement of nursing homes, long-term care facilities, other abandoned elderly already afflicted with life-threatening morbidities. But even then, if you try and compare the case and death rates per 100,000 for the Bronx, Queens, and Brooklyn, which were the worst three boroughs, compare that with what's happening in major cities in Texas, like Houston in particular, but also Dallas and others, it's not even remotely close. So here are the numbers of cases followed by the numbers of deaths per 100,000 people as of June 27th. So in Brooklyn, the ratio of cases to deaths per 100,000 was 3,346 over 234. In Queens, 2,867 over 222. In Brooklyn, 2,345 over 198. In Houston, 567 over 7. Dallas, 696 over 13. Fort Worth, 500 over 10. San Antonio, 423 over 5. Austin, 549 over 9. Now, most of the media panic has been focusing on a surge of new cases in Houston and Harris County more broadly. And then we've gotten the same predictions that the hospitals are going to overflow and all that, which was a prediction that didn't even really pan out in New York City, except for a brief time at a few hospitals. But in the rest of the country, it just did not, it generally did not hold. So let's look at the data. And Stockman says this, you look at the data and you just get reminded of the laziness and servility of the mainstream media. He says, first of all, you're starting with a positive case rate per 100,000 in Houston that is about 17% of what was recorded for the Bronx and a death rate that's 3% of what occurred in the Bronx. Why would you even think that there was a calamity in the offing in Houston? And not only does Houston have one of the world's great medical complexes, but it's also surrounded by other places with more than adequate medical facilities that people could be taken to in an absolute emergency. So here are the numbers. As of June 25th, Texas had an occupancy rate of 76.7% in terms of acute care hospital beds. So there were still nearly 13,000 empty beds available. Only about 5,000 beds, so 12% of the current census, were occupied by people with COVID or suspected of having COVID. So that means that there were 2.5 times more empty hospital beds than beds with COVID patients in them, despite this surge of new cases and hospitalizations. And in fact, the number of empty hospital beds has actually increased over the course of the spring, so since March and going to today. Because on March 18th, and right now we're dealing with statewide figures, so we know that as of June 25th, 76.7% occupancy of hospital beds. But on March 18th in Texas, it was an 85% occupancy rate. But virtually none of those beds had COVID patients in them. March 18th, there had only been 83 confirmed cases and 2 deaths in all of Texas. The beds, by the way, if you're wondering why did they empty out, why this trend of actually having more available bed space as the months went on? Well, one thing is, of course, there were state orders that prohibited elective surgeries. There were normal seasonal declines that you see every single year, year after year. And then there's reclassifying patients admitted for other reasons as being COVID patients. So with regard to that, Stockman corroborates what the person whose letter we read said about what Texas health officials were doing. They would take every single COVID positive person who came into the hospital and log that person as a COVID case, even if the patient was coming for treatment for something other than COVID. So the person was not bothered by COVID in any way, had no symptoms, no problems, was coming for a completely unrelated reason. Suddenly they're a COVID hospitalization. And in fact, a spokesman for the Texas Department of Public Health Services said this: the number of hospitalized patients includes patients with a lab-confirmed case of COVID-19, even if the person is admitted to the hospital for a different reason. And practically everybody who's coming in for some other medical condition gets the COVID-19 test before they can get treatment or surgery for anything else. So we read on one of the state's largest hospital systems website, Texas Health Resources, patients are tested before most procedures. And so what's been going on is, during the original lockdown, a lot of elective surgeries were postponed in order to make way for a surge of COVID patients, which in virtually the entire country failed to appear. And so now state authorities are starting to lift these bans on elective treatments. So now people are going into the hospital in large numbers to get the treatments they couldn't have before. They're being tested for COVID. And now, as Stockman puts it, these people are becoming the statistical gruel for the so-called second wave. So again, here's the Texas hospital system. Here are some numbers, and then we'll get more specific about what's going on in Houston. So this is the trend of unused acute care beds in the Texas hospital system. So we already saw on March 18th, unused acute care beds, 8155. By the end of April, so April 29th, unused acute care beds up to 19,432. Toward the end of May, May 27th, unused acute care beds, 15,315. And as of June 25th, again, 12,571 unused acute care beds. So when we summarize this, we realize that March 18th, at that time, Texas had basically no cases and virtually no deaths related to COVID. And then by the end of June, by June 25th, they were up to nearly 132,000 cases, and yet they had 56% more empty hospital beds on June 25th. And this is the thing that's supposed to make everybody hysterical and crazy. All right, so what about Houston in particular? All right, so as of last week, you look at the Houston area, they have 12,458 staffed acute care beds. That's 23% of the statewide total. 21% of their staffed acute care beds were empty. And on top of that, they have an additional surge capacity of another 925 beds. And remember, this rise in cases has generally been among much younger people. And so these are not people who generally need ICU beds. They just need regular hospital beds. So as of last week, Houston area hospitals had how many confirmed COVID patients? 795. That's 8% of their daily census of nearly 9,800. Now, occasionally you get pushback against hysteria from the medical community, although sometimes they've fallen for the hysteria also. But for example, the head of the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center had an amazing press conference where he said, look, we had this tiny, tiny sliver in terms of percentages of beds that were taken up by COVID patients. Very tiny sliver, and it threw our whole hospital system into disarray, and now we're just going to go back to normal hospital operations. And you could tell he was not happy with all the wild predictions of calamity. And so that's what they went back and did. Well, maybe not quite as blunt as this guy, but we are hearing from some Houston hospitals that this is just overstated. So Memorial Hermann in Houston, which is a major hospital, had its CEO make a statement like this. We actually still think we have plenty of capacity to meet the demand for COVID as well as non-COVID patients. We're always busy in the summertime, and what we're seeing now is a typical summer for us. Across our system, we have about 4,000 beds that we can bring into play, you know, for intensive care. Right now, only about 30% are being utilized for COVID care, so we still have plenty of capacity for COVID patients as well as patients who need hospitalization for other illnesses. We have more drugs at our disposal that we know help limit the severity and duration of the illness. So overall, we're faring better than we did just a couple months ago. Well, that's not the tone you're hearing in the newspapers, that's for sure. Houston Methodist, their CEO says that the number of hospitalizations are, quote, being misinterpreted. And quite frankly, we're concerned that there's a level of alarm in the community that is unwarranted right now. We do have the capacity to care for many more patients and have lots of fluidity and ability to manage. He went on to point out that 1 year ago, his hospital was at 95% ICU capacity. There was no COVID. So apparently 90% ICU capacity is not unheard of for June. It is not a sign of the apocalypse. And about 25% of Houston's ICUs are occupied by COVID patients. He goes on to say, it's completely normal for us to have ICU capacities that run in the 80s and 90s. That's how all hospitals operate. All right, now let's say a couple of brief things about a couple of other places. So New York had about 2,000 cases per 100,000 and 130 deaths per 100,000. Here are the numbers for the states we're supposed to panic about: Arizona, Texas, and Florida. So we've been talking about Texas. There, it's 454 cases per 100,000 and 8 deaths per 100,000, not 130. In Arizona, 913 cases per 100,000 and 21 deaths. And in Florida, 513 cases per 100,000 and 16 deaths per 100,000. So not even anywhere remotely close to New York. Now, here's something interesting we learn from the Florida COVID dashboard. As of May 15th, I'm reading this, Florida is reporting both specimens, PCR and antibody, and people tested. We report positives and negatives based on the number of people tested. However, the people tested number reported on Florida's dashboard has come into question as of May 31st because this number is not fully deduplicated. Florida's report states that people tested on multiple days will be included for each day a new result was received. Okay, what? So that's a whole new case each day. All right, fine. Then there's a further problem. And here, let me just read Stockman's analysis. He says, in the case of serology or antibody tests, why in the world would you include those in a number which is hyped as representing the real-time spread of new infections. That's what so-called viral or PCR tests do. But serology tests are just the opposite. They reflect done and gone history of an infection that has been beaten down by the person's immune system, where victory over the COVID remains detectable in blood samples. Nor are we talking about rounding errors. Not all states disclose the mix of PCR versus antibody tests. But take the case of Arizona, which does, and is among the states with rising case counts. According to the state's website, yesterday there were 15,530 new PCR tests and 2,277 serology tests. The resulting number of new positive cases was 3,428, which implies a high infection rate of 19.2%. But as we said, the emphasis is on the term implied, and for two reasons. First, the positives from serology tests represent prior immune system victories won, not threats looming down the road, illnesses, hospitalizations, etc. So not only are these so-called positives apples and oranges, but the mix of the types of tests reported on any given day matters a lot. That's because the infection rate to date in Arizona for the serology tests is 3.1%, and for the PCR tests, it is 11.1%. And that makes sense because sick or symptomatic people tend to get PCR tests, while people wanting to prove they already have had it get antibody tests. Now, here's the thing. The share of the high infection rate PCR tests has been going way up in Arizona in recent weeks, in exact lockstep with the so-called breakout of new positive cases. So, May 4th, there were 4,494 PCR tests versus 4,320 serology tests. PCR, 51% of the total. June 19th, there were 16,216 PCR tests versus only 1,454 serology tests. So PCR is 91% of the total tests. So consequently, nearly all of the growth of positive cases between the two dates, 495 on May 4th versus 3,279 on June 19th, is owing to the fact that the number of tests has more than doubled, and the share of those tests consisting of higher-yielding PCR, i.e. mostly already sick or symptomatic people, has been soaring. Now then let's get back to that not deduplicated problem in Florida. Because as Stockman says, think of all the occupations where if you're tested positive, but you know you have no symptoms or minor symptoms, and your employer tells you to go home and just sit there. Well, you want to get back to work and get your paycheck again. You want to just keep getting tested until you finally get a negative result. So no doubt there must be tens of thousands of people repetitively taking the test, the PCR test, over and over and over. And as more and more states are reopening and allowing people to go back to work, you would get more and more of these people seeking more tests just to be reassured that they are now negative and they can go back to work. So the growing number of positive tests is not due only to the rising number of tests, but also to an increasing frequency of the same person receiving a test over and over again, but Florida not deduplicating them. And then finally, a few things about the United States as a whole. When we look at the so-called CFR or case fatality rate, that's been heading downward fairly sharply. So when we look at the last 10 days of April, May, and June, the figures for April are CFR of 6.6%. That's down to 4.5% at the end of May. And most recent 10 days in June, 2.1%. So that's a pretty clear trend that we should be happy, not panicked about. All right, I actually think that's probably enough. Those are enough numbers for one day. But when you look at these numbers, you see that the panic does not seem to be justified. And I think that's maybe the slogan for the whole thing, isn't it? The panic does not seem to be justified. A couple of things, though, for you before we go. Number one, of course, is an action item. If you're interested in this material, I have an ebook that I'm very happy with. My chapter in it really summarizes everything I've been saying as well as I possibly can. And that's Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About the Lockdown. You can get that at wrongaboutlockdown.com. In the United States, you can also get it, if you prefer, by just texting the word lockdown to the number 33444. That's the first thing. The other thing is, if you need more listening, then I'd like to recommend to you 412 Liberty, which you can find at 412liberty.com. This is the podcast of free market anarchist Mike Cuneo from Pittsburgh, and he's covered all kinds of topics that you guys will love. He covered the situation in Seattle closely. He's got some excellent interviews with Walter Block on all kinds of difficult questions for libertarians. There's Bitcoin, there's the virus, there's the problems with so-called limited government, why that doesn't seem to work. Great stuff. So check it out at 412liberty.com. You know that, of course, you can get nice publicity from me like this for a website that you would like to create someday. If you get your hosting through me, I'll give you a nice shout out and plus some other help like some free tutorials, membership in my private bloggers group. A lot of nice benefits from old Woods here. It helps to be a friend of Woods. So check it out if you're interested in that. If you're thinking of starting a blog or a website, make sure you check out my bonuses page first so you do the things that qualify you for the bonus. So tomwoods.com/publicity is where you can go to get information about how you can get publicity for your site that you're thinking of creating. 412liberty.com is the one that I'm talking about today, and I'll link to that on our show notes page, tomwoods.com/1683. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.